fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
Thank you, Daniel Craig. Yes, it is Friday, and a fabulous Friday to all of you listening to The Cale Clark Show, wherever you may be. Maybe you're in the car, maybe you're on the West Coast, maybe you're picking up your kids from school, maybe you're leaving work, maybe you're chilling out on this Friday. Hey, the lines are open. 1-888-914-9149. You can call in and talk to me, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program. And I got an email to share with you in just a moment. You can email us, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And our show account, well, on Twitter is at Cale Clark Show. You can check that out. That is the producer Lucas shadow account. And my personal Twitter handle is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with N-E. All right. Well, you know, I don't know what you guys are going to be doing this weekend. Maybe you've got some plans. Maybe you're going to be checking out a movie. Well, there's one movie that I saw this week, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. It's one of the Marvel films. I'm going to give my Catholic review of that film coming up later in the show. I'm going to keep it as spoiler-free as I possibly can, but bottom line is I really liked the movie. I thought it was really good, and I never thought I'd say this, but man, I enjoyed it far more than No Time to Die, which as a James Bond fan, I was hoping for so much more from that film. I was a big Daniel Craig fan. I was hoping for so much more from that film. But Shang-Chi was really good. It was really fun. We really had a lot of fun watching that. So I'm going to share some insights from that in just a little bit. But from movies to music, I did get an email about something I said on the show the other day. And this email comes to us from Boston, from Beantown. Fran in Boston. Fran writes in, "Hi, Cale. I could not believe my ears the other night when you said that Imagine by John Lennon was one of the worst songs of the 20th century." Let's hear a little clip, Lucas. We all know the song, but...
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people
living for today.
All right, so we all know this song, and producer Lucas, wasn't it the speaking of movies, wasn't it the actress Gal Gadot who had that? Tried to get all these celebrities together during COVID and sang a rendition of Imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Right. She got blasted for it.
Yeah.
You know, she thought she was doing a good thing. I'm going to cheer people up during the pandemic. And I believe everybody turned on her because, oh, yeah, you guys are living in your mansions. Easier for you to be in lockdown.
Right.
Yeah, but, yeah, so she was trying to help. Poor Gal Gadot, I tell you. The lovely and talented Gal Gadot. But anyway, so that was really the last time that this song kind of got into the public consciousness. But anyways, back to Fran's email. I couldn't believe the other night when you said that Imagine was the worst song of the 20th century. That's one of my favorite songs. It's beautiful, and it speaks of a better world. So please tell me why you think it's so awful. I do enjoy your show, and I love, of course, your daughter signing off for you at the end of the show. Sincerely, Fran in Watertown, Massachusetts. So Fran, thank you very much. And Fran is listening on 1150 AM WWDJ in Boston, Massachusetts, where all the Patriots fans are happy after they blew out the Atlanta Falcons last night on Thursday Night Football, 25-0. I watched it every play. Fran, I will tell you why I think it's a bad song. And I know, and I would say, first of all, thank you for your kind words. I'm glad you enjoy listening to the show. And a lot of people, I don't think, have really stopped to actually read the lyrics or listen to the lyrics really closely of this song. And I'm sure my pal Pat Madrid would agree with me. He's the biggest Beatles fan that I know, but I'm sure he doesn't like this song either. But here's something that happened. I remember 10 years after the death of John Lennon, Remember when John Lennon was assassinated outside of his Manhattan apartment on December the 8th and back in 1980? 10 years after that, Yoko Ono, his wife, she actually made the suggestion that in memory of Lennon, on the anniversary of his death, on the 10-year anniversary of his death, she wanted the whole world, she wanted every radio station in every country around the world to play this song at the same time, and she wanted everybody in the world to sing the song together. Imagine. Imagine that. Anyway, so she actually said this would be a great international anthem. That's what she wanted it to be. And she thought that the best way that people could do justice to the memory of her late husband was to keep this song alive, keep this legacy alive. And a lot of people actually did do that. A lot of radio stations did do that. They tried to get everybody singing Imagine at the same time. And so there were lots of crowds. Maybe you remember this. Crowds were gathered, including outside of the complex where he died, lighting candles, swaying together, singing it karaoke style, kind of like what I just tried to do. And even to this day, this song is so popular. New Year's Eve celebrations, if you watch the New Year's Eve celebrations from Times Square on TV, I remember a few years ago, the artist CeeLo Green did a version of this on New Year's Eve, and he actually changed the words when John Lennon said, no religion to, imagine no religion to. CeeLo Green changed it to, all religions are true. No, that's also wrong, CeeLo. That's terrible. And that's not true. That's not true. All religions are not true. And by the way, every religion thinks it's true. So they're not that relativistic about it. Anyways, back to John Lennon's Imagine. It really does give us his thoughts, his philosophy on life. And let's take a look at the lyrics. So Fran, I want to tell you why I think it's a terrible song. And I think obviously John Lennon was a super talented artist, and so was Paul McCartney and the rest of the Beatles. But here, let's just look at the first verse of Imagine. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. So really, as one writer said, this is John Lennon kind of being like Karl Marx, promoting this sort of closed view of life. You know, we're kind of living in this tunnel. There's nothing above us, nothing below us. There's only today. There's only what you can see in front of you. So this concept that there's an afterlife, there's an actual real place called heaven. Lennon considered that to be absolutely ridiculous. He didn't buy into that at all. He actually saw the Christian faith as kind of the opiate of the masses, that would, you know, people would put all their hope in this afterlife, which in his mind didn't exist. And he thought that will rob them from truly living in the present moment. And so clearly, not only did he deny heaven, he denied an eternal hell too. That's also in the lyrics. So he didn't think there was any punishment for unbelievers in the afterlife. He thought that hell was only a means of frightening people into abandoning their legitimate rights in this world, in their attempts to gratify themselves in this world. They're spending so much time trying to avoid eternal punishment and get eternal rewards in heaven that they're not really living their best life now. So that's his whole issue. Imagine all the people living for today. He wanted people simply enjoying life in the here and now. And so later on, in the chorus of the song, here's what he says. You may call me a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Someday all the world will join us, and the world will be as one. So this is the atheistic ideal that he was trying to put forth. So he also thought that there shouldn't be any actual countries. This is also in the song. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. So clearly he sees religion as a cause, as many people do who aren't members of the church. He saw religion as a cause of a lot of the world's strife and wars. Nothing to kill or die for. He didn't like countries either because, hey, people fight for their country. And so this goes back to Karl Marx, because Marx believed that his philosophy was going to transcend culture, was going to transcend borders. And he actually wanted all the workers of the world to get together in a global, universal quest for equality. So that was part of the deal. But it is true that a lot of wars have been fought in the name of religion, and some unjust wars have been fought by certain countries. But really what the major cause of some of that stuff is not so much nations, but the depravity of human beings, the sinfulness of human beings, original sin, and all of its after effects that are in the world. So this extreme pacifism that Lenin kind of put forth, it's not realistic enough to deal with living in a sinful world. And William F. Buckley actually said something about this song. Here's what he said, quote, he said, "We certainly want to imagine a world in which everyone lives in peace, but you see, that is only possible in a world in which people are willing to die for causes." Imagine that people didn't stand up to Hitler. What would have happened if people weren't willing to die? If soldiers on D-Day, we just obviously celebrated our salute to service a few days ago on November the 11th on Veterans Day on the Cale Clark Show. Imagine if brave soldiers were not willing to lay down their lives on D-Day. And as far as this concept of no countries that Lenin was promoting, William F. Buckley also said this, quote, "There have got to be reasons that affected even John Lennon to prefer one country against another. I happen to know this to be the case because a long time ago, he asked me to help him get papers permitting him to live in the United States rather than in Great Britain." End of quote. So how about that? According to William F. Buckley, Lennon said basically, "Hey man, can you get me into America? Can you somehow get me some documentation here?" So he didn't exactly take his own advice there. John Lennon, he certainly did prefer America, it seems, over where he was living, or maybe he wanted to be a dual citizen. I don't know, but let's look at the very last stanza. We'll keep this pretty brief, but let's look at the last stanza of the song Imagine. "Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world." So again, this is Communism 101. Every struggle is going to go away when there is no private property, because everything's going to belong to everybody else. And in reality, what that means, according to a writer by the name of Klaus Stamm, he said, okay, if you really buy into this, if there's no private property, everything belongs to everyone, what actually is going to happen is everything is going to belong to the state. So Lenin also thought if you had communal possessions, you ban all private property, there's not going to be any hunger in the world. Well, how could he say that? I mean, we've seen the collapse of, years ago, back in 89, the Berlin Wall. We saw in the communist world that there was a lot of hunger. There were huge bread lines in the communist world, unchecked corruption and greed. So again, the problem is human sinfulness. So It's kind of tragic to see younger people today, a lot of young people today, wanting to reach towards a form of communism, kind of forgetting the past, forgetting the recent past. Those who obviously forget history are doomed to repeat it, as we know. And obviously one could say Lenin wasn't exactly living his own gospel there in that sense, because he did have a lot of wealth. He did have a lot of privileges in this world. So it's not as if he was giving up all of his own possessions or anything like that. So, and don't forget, at the end of the day, here's the real solution to the problems in the world that Lenin was lamenting. It's the gospel. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not the lyrics of the song Imagine. It's the Sermon on the Mount. That's what we really need to be reading. Remember when John Lennon said that the Beatles were more famous than Jesus Christ? Well, remember, Christ is the one who teaches us the truth about man, about God, about how life should be, the new heaven, the new earth, the kingdom of God. And it's not, and it wasn't the opiate of the people. This is actually true. And there's evidence for this, the evidence for his powerful resurrection from the dead. God would not raise a heretic, a false teacher from the dead. There's just too much evidence. We've looked at this. I just did a two-part episode on the Faith Explained series about the miracles of Jesus. You can't explain these things away. He gave evidence backed up his claim for his teaching with his deeds, with his miracles. So anyways, it's a very worldly perspective. It's focused on this world. It's anti-supernatural. It's this idea that we're living in a tunnel. There's no way that there is a supernatural world. There's no way it can have any effect on this world. And it's a bad thing. But that's not true. When you look at the history of the world, wherever the faith of the church has actually taken root, it has unquestionably made life better, more just. All of our systems of laws and equality come from the Catholic faith. So I just think it's incredibly naive. And really, this concept that there is no hell, there is no punishment in the afterlife, that's the real opiate of the people. That's the real drug that people need to get off so they can realize what's actually at stake here. So anyways, this isn't a dream. And yes, he was a dreamer. This isn't a dream. This is actually reality, the Catholic faith. So Fran, I hope that answers your question. From a musical perspective, it might be catchy, but the actual message of the song is actually pretty dangerous to this day. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you have a take on that, give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. You can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. When we come back, I'm going to give my review of Shang-Chi and what are some of the Catholic lessons we can get from this really fun martial arts superhero movie. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the show. It is Friday. You know what that means. The week that was on the Cale Clark Show is coming up real soon, so stay tuned for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, my Shang-Chi review, which I loved the movie. And I think there's some interesting themes from a Catholic perspective in this movie, too. Maybe you'll get a chance to watch it this weekend. I don't know. It's streaming now on Disney+. I think you can also rent it from several other outlets. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. You can tweet at me at Cale Clark. And I just answered the question, why is the song Imagine by John Lennon such a terrible song from a Catholic perspective? Hopefully I did that topic some justice. Somebody had called in during the break and couldn't stay on the line, but the comment that this caller made, and I hadn't heard this before, apparently there was a mystic who said that John Lennon is in purgatory for a long time. That's what the guy said. I've never heard this. I know nothing about this. And apparently Marilyn Monroe is also in purgatory. Okay. So, well, I hope that they're at least in purgatory, because that would mean anybody who's in purgatory is going to heaven. Okay. This is not a second chance after death. So, Lord willing, that is true. They asked for forgiveness from the Lord. Dee Dee from Phoenix, a longtime listener and caller. She was not able to stay with us on the line, but she did want to mention an anecdote from our good friend C.S. Lewis. Apparently at one point C.S. Lewis stopped at a friend's grave. The friend happened to be an atheist, and C.S. Lewis apparently said to his companion, "Oh, he'll find out soon enough." Okay. So I can't verify the authenticity of that incident, but thanks for sharing that, Dee Dee. And we're going to go to the phones right now, actually. And if you want to call in, 888-914-9149. Jose is in San Benito, Texas. Hello, Jose.
Hey, Kel. I was thinking you should change your show name to the confessionary, you know, because I'm always calling to, you know, tell you stories about who I am or used to be.
The confessional. Yeah, we'll have a section called the confessional where it's non-sacramental. tell me your past. No, I'm only kidding. But so tell me about your past. What do you want to confess this time, Jose?
Kel, I want to share that I'm a former socialist communist.
Really?
Yes. For many years, you know, I was a hardcore socialist communist. Oh, okay. You know, with a teenager. I mean, I didn't do any violence, of course. I saw myself as a hardcore communist. Didn't believe in the private property. and you know the story, right?
Yeah.
So you know, I open my eyes, I now know that every time we try to conquer the world to human means, you know, human ideologies, we always fail. We fail because we take away God from the rules, from the ideology. And that's because we leave nothing to chance, and we're humans, and we fail. I'm a fan of the Beatles, you know, and actually Imagine is one of the songs that makes me uneasy, to be honest. I know it's from John Lennon, it's not the Beatles, but still, you know, it was one of the first songs that I started listening, you know,
kind of hooked you into
with
the Beatles,
a different perspective.
Yeah.
When I opened my eyes, I want to stay away from, but I'm still a fan of the Rolling Stones, you know, with their songs and their lyrics were not that Christian either.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to add that, you know, to me, in my generation, it seems we're more open to communism and socialism. I'm afraid that's because we didn't live, you know, prior to the 90s. I'm from 93.
Okay.
So sometimes we're just called to like the, you know, the opposition, you know, we don't understand what's going on there. We don't understand what it is to almost die of hunger because of bad government, bad politicians, bad leaders. And you know what, you know, it's always greener on the other side. But, oh, well, oh God, that side is not green at all. It's just fake, you know. It's like many Chinese right now who are, you know, dying of hunger. Many of them in the concentration camps.
That's right. There's a lot of stuff going on. And also the disappearance of that tennis star. That is a very disturbing story.
Oh, yes. Anyways, another point I want to add is I think we need to speak up. We need to speak up because everywhere I see, at least in the media, maybe not everywhere, but in many places in the media, we see this pro-socialist, pro-communist agenda. Which, you know, it mutilates the younger generations.
Yeah, I think what I said earlier, Jose, is probably true in one respect. I think a lot of younger people today are unaware of the horrors of communist regimes, and just look through the history of the 20th century, and you can see the rotten fruit from that, and what happened in China, how communism took hold there, and we've seen the effects even to this day of what's going on there, and some of the atrocities that you mentioned, Jose, is a good case in point there. So yeah, it is a dangerous ideology, to be sure, and we need to focus on the values of the kingdom. So Jose, thank you very much for that call. Call in anytime. Well, listen, I want to move on, because I did mention I'd try to squeeze in my review of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which is one of the latest Marvel movies that's out there. Came out in September. It's now out on streaming, and I saw it this week. Really, really enjoyed it. I'm not going to see Eternals. Apparently, that's the worst one that they've ever made. It's just getting terrible reviews. Not even going to go there, but I did enjoy Shang-Chi. I got to tell you. Here's a clip from the trailer.
Throughout my life, the Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
You are a product of all who came before you. The legacy of your family.
I thought I could change my name. Start a new life. But I could never escape his shadow.
My son, you can't run from your past.
Is this what you wanted?
Okay, all right. Sounds pretty exciting. So I'm going to try to string some thoughts together. I have a lot of thoughts about this movie. By the way, it's getting great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's up to 94% rated fresh by audiences. So it's a really good chance that you'll like it too. At any rate, you know, viewer discretion is advised. The usual caveats. It's not necessarily for younger kids, all that sort of stuff. Focus on the Family has a website where they review movies from they're evangelicals, but they kind of give tips on should families watch this, that sort of thing. So they have a review up on it where they talk about some of the, you know, questionable things that are in the movie, but it's not, I didn't think it was too bad from that point of view. Over at Word on Fire, on the Word on Fire blog, Rachel Bowman has a really interesting piece about the movie on the Word on Fire blog. And she kind of relates some of the parenting themes that are in the film. So Shang-Chi, who's actually played by a Canadian, Simu Liu. He grew up not too far from where I live in Toronto. And he kind of shot to fame, I guess, through this cult classic Canadian television show called Kim's Convenience, about a convenience store. He's kind of vaulted into the stratosphere with this Marvel film. So good for him. And he's Shang-Chi, all right? But his dad, his name in the film is Zhu Wenwu, and this guy gets the Ten Rings. So these Ten Rings, he's been alive for over 1,000 years. He gets these Ten Rings, they're magical rings. He's got five on each forearm. It gives him supernatural power, the ability to kind of live forever. And when Shang-Chi's dad meets his mom for the first time, she's kind of a warrior princess of sorts as well, they have this like really beautifully choreographed martial arts fight. He's trying to take over her kingdom, and they have this kind of fight that's almost like a dance. It's almost like a dance. And so they fall in love, and Rachel Bowman says that this is really a lot like how God wants to get into relationship with us, how... she doesn't press the analogy, obviously. She's the white, you know, God is not, God is the Father, of course, Son, and Holy Spirit. But the bride of Shang-Chi's father kind of acts like God in the way that she exudes peace, got a lot of power, but also peace. And she's able to kind of conquer this guy. And then he has to learn the lesson, Shang-Chi's dad, about how he needs to give himself completely. He needs to, that's what really love is all about. It's about the total gift of self. Think about a crucifix, the total gift of Jesus for his bride, the church. So anyways, her peace, as Rachel Bowman writes, was stronger than his anger. Okay, so he kind of gives up the Ten Rings, the dad. He's willing to embrace mortality. He actually settles down with Shang-Chi's mom. They have kids together, two kids, and everything seems great, but things kind of go off the rails. I won't tell you what happens, but eventually the dad takes up once again the Ten Rings. He becomes very angry. Well, I kind of have to tell you what happened at one level to explain the Catholic point of the movie. Not that it's trying to be a Catholic movie or anything, but I think there's some things that Catholics can draw from it. The wife dies, Shang-Chi's mother dies, and this kind of drives the dad into this huge anger. He once again takes up his powers, and he really wants to get her back. He misses her so much. And so this is a really, really interesting thing that happens in the movie. The dad kind of falls prey to the lies of the evil one. So Wenwu, who is Shang-Chi's dad, he says that he starts saying, I can hear the voice of my wife calling me from beyond the grave. And the voice is telling him, you've got to go back to the mystical land where your wife is from, called Ta Lo, and you've got to free her. So he tries to do this. Unfortunately, the voice is not coming from her. It comes from this evil being, this great dragon that's called the Dweller in Darkness. And he wants to influence Wenwu for his own evil purposes. So here's what happens when Wenwu tries to let this creature, who's kind of trapped behind what's called the gate of the underworld, this dark gate. He's trying to set him free from the dark gate because he thinks it's his wife calling to him, but it's not. This is the conflict that happens between him and his son, Shang-Chi.
I have to save her. She's calling to me.
I wish that were true. Dad, please. Your family needs you.
Oh,
Okay, all right. So the dad thinks it's the wife calling from beyond the grave. It's not. It's this creature, the dweller in darkness, this huge kind of cross between a sea creature and a dragon, which is kind of how the Bible describes Satan, by the way. At any rate, kind of like the Leviathan that comes out of the sea. And so, unfortunately, this creature gets loose and tries to kill everybody. And how does he try to do it? Well, he sends out all these like kind of junior demons. And what they do is they try to suck people's souls out of their bodies. Okay, so very much an image like Satan. And I read a cool piece on the movie by Andrea Ulrich, who is writing on the website Medium. And she talked about this. She talked about how the Christian faith teaches that there is, obviously, a constant battle over our souls. And Saint Ignatius Loyola, who fought in a lot of actual military battles and became a saint, he really understood well the tactics of the evil one. And what I thought was really interesting was how the dad in the movie mistakes the voice of the devil for something good. He thinks that and this is exactly how the devil operates. He tries to trick us. He doesn't always offer us something that's totally and obviously evil. He operates, as St. Paul says, as an angel of light. You know, what he has to offer for us sounds really, really good, but it's going to lead to our destruction. So at any rate, Ignatius understood this really, really well. And he had all these rules for spiritual discernment. How can you discern whether a suggestion is from the devil or from God? And so he said that one technique that the devil uses is this technique of disguising himself as an angel of light. So a suggestion that appears to be helpful, it appears to be for the good, but in fact leads us to discouragement and despair and away from God's plan for our life. And so she has a quote from Father Robert Spitzer, a Jesuit, brilliant, brilliant guy. He's one of the smartest guys in the whole world, Father Robert Spitzer. And he talked about this technique of the evil one. He said, quote, this is Father Spitzer, "The devil usually dissuades us from our good intentions by trying to discourage us. But sometimes the deceiver offers thoughts that appear to be aimed at building our spiritual life." Okay, this is me talking here. This is obviously one of the most insidious tricks of the enemy. Aimed at building our spiritual life, allegedly, but he's actually trying to destroy us. This calls for a lot of discernment. So Father Spitzer continues on. "The real intentions of these temptations is to discourage us in the long term." So here's an example. Let's say that you want to improve your spiritual life. You want to improve your love of neighbor. So a thought might come to you, hey, if half an hour of daily prayer is good, then 3 hours must be even better. Hey, that seems like super spiritual, right? So you begin your new discipline of trying to pray for 3 hours a day. I think for most lay people, if you can get to half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the afternoon, evening, that's a good thing to kind of shoot for. Maybe start off with 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But this idea of 3 hours of daily prayer really is not really compatible with the responsibilities that God wants from us in the lay life. At any rate, the devil might whisper this thought in your ear: if half an hour of daily prayer is good, 3 hours must be better. So you begin your new discipline, you try to actually do it, but then you find yourself growing really, really tired. You don't have enough time for your family. You don't have enough time for your work. You find yourself snapping at people, looking down on them. They should pray as hard as I do. You start to believe that God is a taskmaster who expects at least 3 hours of daily prayer each day from you, and you resent that he isn't giving you the graces that you expected from all this effort that you're putting in. So in the long run, you feel cynical and discouraged about your faith, and all because the evil one succeeded in pushing you beyond your limits. This is why discernment of spirits is so important, end of quote. That is an absolutely dynamite quote from Father Robert Spitzer. So that's the kind of subtle temptation that the enemy can try to pull off with you. So that's what happens in the movie. Wenwu, the father of Shang-Chi, he fails to discern where the voice is coming from. It's coming from the dragon. It's coming from the enemy. And it leads to all kinds of terrible choices. Another thing that the movie can teach us from a Catholic perspective, and another thing that is brought up in this piece that I read by Andrew Ulrich, which I thought was really, really good on Medium, She says the temptation to despair is kind of juxtaposed with the power of redemption. So Shang-Chi, part of the movie is about finding out who you are, your identity, as a lot of superhero movies are. And in one of the scenes in the film, Shang-Chi struggles with his past, and he feels very unworthy of love because of the mistakes that he's made. He doesn't think that he'll ever be able to overcome the sins of the past. And this is really something that we have an answer for in our Catholic faith. Sometimes we feel genuine guilt because of sin, and we should feel guilt when we sin. Otherwise, our conscience might be a little bit off. But there's also a problem if you feel excessive shame, and that's really what Shang-Chi is going through in the film. And a lot of cultures, they really, really struggle with personal shame. Brené Brown, who's a writer, psychologist, she wrote about this difference between shame and guilt. And she said this: I believe there's a profound difference between shame and guilt. Guilt is adoptive and helpful. It's holding something we've done or failed to do up against our values, and we feel psychological discomfort. And that's really how we should feel when we sin, seriously. And this should lead us to seeking God's forgiveness and to confession. That's me talking, not Brené Brown. But Brené Brown continues on. I define shame, so here's the difference. I define shame as the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Something that we've experienced, something that we've done or failed to do, makes us unworthy of connection. I don't believe shame is helpful or productive. In fact, I think shame is much more likely to be the source of destructive and hurtful behavior than being any kind of solution or cure. So yeah, this idea that I think a lot of people walk around feeling this way, that I'm not worthy of love. God can't possibly love me, and neither can anybody else. This is where the gospel comes in, the parable of the prodigal son. Look at all the absolutely terrible choices that guy made in his life. But the father obviously does not want to reject him. He wants to embrace us. And this is something that I have to get through my head too. And I went to this men's event this past week, and there was a guy who was reading an examination of conscience. There was a chance to go to confession. I was in the confessional line. I was waiting my turn. And there was a guy who was reading out an examination of conscience and just some questions to help us think about, you know, our lives and, you know, something, how is it going, and some things to kind of focus on. And one of the lines that he said in this examination of conscience really struck me. He said, God is not your accuser. God is not your accuser. And I needed to hear that, because sometimes I still get trapped into this mindset of thinking that God, you know, wants to zap me when I sin. You know, he's just waiting for an opportunity, waiting for me to slip, and then, you know, he wants to, you know, send the lightning bolt. And I don't know where that comes from, whether it's sort of Catholic guilt that some of us, you know, bad mindsets of Catholicism that we have to kind of unlearn from our past. And you know who really is the accuser? The devil. That's how Scripture describes him, the accuser of the brethren. He's like the prosecuting attorney. This guy does not deserve to be forgiven. That's what he says. But Jesus Christ is not the accuser. He wants us to experience mercy. He's pleading our case before the Father, and he's showing the Father his wounds. Hey, I suffered this so that this guy could be forgiven. He wants us to go to the confessional and find mercy. So, you know, I host a Catholic radio show or two, but I still need to learn this stuff too and remind myself of this all the time. So this is important. And I think a lot of people, aside from that sort of thinking, they also struggle with despair, that thinking that God can't forgive me. That's a huge problem. The two ditches, like G.K. Chesterton said, the two ditches you don't want to fall into on either side of the road: the ditch of presumption, saying God must forgive me, it doesn't matter what I do, I can just, you know, at the end of life, just live as I please and then ask God to forgive me, everything's fine. What are the odds you're actually going to do that, number one? Because your heart becomes hardened like Pharaoh's. And then the ditch on the other side of the road is despair, that God can't forgive me. And that's, you need to take that middle path. You need to take that middle path. At any rate, so I think the movie is interesting. There's a lot of thought in the movie that really is compatible with Catholic spirituality. especially this conception of evil, this dweller in darkness that is a lot like the devil. And it's interesting because he's kind of trapped behind in the movie this gate of the underworld. And Caesarea Philippi, when Jesus said, "You are Peter, and on this rock I'll build my church." Well, I've actually been there. When I take people on pilgrimage to Israel, I take them there. There is an actual rock formation there, and at the bottom is this cave, this deep, dark, dank cave. And the ancients thought that was the gate to the underworld, and this rock was actually keeping it sealed. And so it was kind of fascinating to me, but I thought the movie was pretty cool, and I think you might enjoy it. So anyways, for what it's worth, that's my take. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, catch the last train home with John Mayer. Cool song, cool artist. Anyways, got some surprises for you coming up in this segment, so you're going to want to keep the dial locked in. Hey, I want to tell you really quick. I can't believe this, but Advent is happening next week. Wow. And you can discover the beauty of Advent with a really cool new thing that we have going on at Relevant Radio by the Merry Beggars, and it's called Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. It's kind of done almost like an audio Advent calendar. It's so cool. You can actually experience this Christmas classic with a radio drama with professional actors. It's really, really good, done by Peter Atkinson here at Relevant Radio and the Merry Beggars. Check it out, relevantradio.com or the Relevant Radio app. We'll be telling you much, much more about that in the coming days. And one thing that I did see in the news was Prince Charles is in the news once again. Prince Charles and Camilla. What's her title again, Lucas? The Duchess of Cornwall, is that right? Or Cambridge? I don't know. Anyways, so I'm not really a royals guy, which puts me in conflict with some people in my family. I have respect for the royals, but I'm open to being sold on it a little bit more. I was watching, speaking of entertainment, The Crown on Netflix. I really enjoy The Crown. It's really good. It's really good, especially the first season of The Crown where Claire Foy plays Queen Elizabeth. I don't know if you've seen this, Lucas, but it gave me a little bit more of an appreciation, especially for the Queen. I think everybody respects Queen Elizabeth. She's, you know, she's just somebody who has a heart of service. And that talks about the early years of her becoming queen. You know, when her dad dies, she becomes the queen, and the queen mother, this, you know, aged queen mother, tells her, you know, the crown must always win. The crown must always win. There's a lot of conflict that comes into your life because of the crown, and it just gave me a lot more of an appreciation. So that first season talks about her conflicts and relationship with Winston Churchill. It's really interesting, have this constitutional monarchy, which is not obviously the way the United States works. But my brother-in-law, Joe, because of his military service, he actually has met Prince Charles in real life a couple times. And he actually is really interesting because the way it kind of works with the Canadian system is that the Queen is technically still the head of state. It doesn't really have anything to do with the day-to-day, but so, for example, Prince Charles is kind of the ultimate commander of the military unit that my brother-in-law was commanding. So he actually like wrote him a letter about all this stuff and different guys, different soldiers. And when he met him in London on this visit, Prince Charles actually asked him, "Oh, how's this guy doing? How's that guy doing?" He actually knew, he remembered, which was just insane. So that really impressed my brother-in-law. Anyway, so Charles and Camilla went to the Jordan River. They actually went to the country of Jordan. They didn't go to the Jordan River in Israel. And what were they trying to do? They're trying to collect water from the Jordan River for royal baptisms, to baptize royal children later on. So apparently this is a tradition that they do with the royal family. They take water from the River Jordan, and they're expecting that maybe Princess Beatrice's daughter, Sienna, who was just born in September, might be baptized with this water. Princess Eugenie's son, August, was born in February. They should have named him February, obviously. They might baptize these royal kids with this water. So anyways, they're making a big deal about it. And there's some guys in Jordan who are trying to say, this is the spot where Prince Charles came. This is the spot where Jesus was baptized. I have my doubts about that. when I take people on pilgrimages to the Holy Land, they often ask about the Jordan River. And the Jordan River today, it's not at all where it was in Jesus' time because of movement of the earth and tectonic plates and all that sort of stuff. It's not where it used to be. So we can't say with any certainty where exactly Jesus was baptized. But there's a few sites that say this is the place. And one of them is a pretty popular spot. I don't think I would take people back there again. Because again, there's a lot of places where you go in the Holy Land where we know this is the spot, like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus, in fact, was crucified, buried, and resurrected. That's for sure. But when you go to the traditional site in Israel that they say this is where Jesus was baptized, if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. The water is actually green. Like it looks like the Chicago River on St. Patrick's Day. It's actually not the cleanest water in the world. And all these Protestant groups, they get rebaptized in this water. Now, we Catholics don't do that, obviously. But they sell this stuff. They bottle it and they sell this green water to you for $20. And they say, take it home to your friends. Well, you know what you can actually do? You can actually go to the hotel and turn on the tap. And it's, by the way, that water is also from the Jordan River, except it's clean. Put that in a bottle and take it home. And that's free. So there's your tip of the day. Anyways, thought that was kind of interesting, but we'll talk about baptism another day. That was going to lead me into a whole thing on baptism, but we don't have time. But we do have time for this, the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Here it is. You know, I won a three-point shootout.
If your three-point shot is good enough, I'd like to invite you to our parish out here in Southern California to a one-on-one shoot-off. We're starting a men's team out here, and we'll see how you do. Maybe I might recruit you from Toronto.
Hey,
do you still have your beard?
I still have the beard, yeah. I look like I've been out in a log cabin somewhere. today is the feast day, Blessed Lucy of Narnia. But what about the real-life Lucy of Narnia? I think in this case, truth is better than fiction. Last night was the CBS special called Adele One Night Only. So Alex Clare, he was supposed to tour with Adele back in 2012, but the record company kind of gave him an ultimatum because a lot of the gigs fell around the time of Passover, as well as on the Sabbath. This is what Alex Clare had to say at the time. He said, historically, this has been a running theme, not just for Jewish people, but for anybody who makes commitments elsewhere. I will say this, I'm a huge James Bond fan, didn't like the movie. Daniel Craig deserved a much better ending than he got in No Time to Die. There is an argument for God's existence that you can use that doesn't even involve a Bible. It's called the Kalam cosmological argument. Would you choose your parish church for its priest, or would you not go to a particular parish because of its priest?
I think you are very courageous to even ask this question.
March on, and might roll my eyes a few times, but This is the parish. I live there.
A lot of people are very hostile towards priests on one hand, but then there's always like the danger of becoming a celebrity priest as well. Which would you rather have? The metaverse, augmented reality, or none of the above?
I'm not an anti-Facebook person, but like I said, we just decided not to be a part of it anymore.
I also belong to a group that believes in the future of education in virtual and augmented reality. To be a strong person, you have to learn to accept consequences. And if you're going to be on AR or VR, what's going to be happening is you're going to be basically controlling your world.
To see families in church is really, really important. It's a good witness. And it's attractive to people. I know that some people might give you the stink eye. I want things to be quiet in my church, you know, but no. It's good. It's good. We need it. All right. Thanks, Producer Lucas. That was an excellent. What a week we had.
So many discussions.
Yeah.
So many discussions.
And you can binge listen to all the shows on relevantradio.com through the Relevant Radio app or wherever you get your podcast. You can get all caught up. And also on The Faith Explained as well. How much time do we have, Lucas? Minute and a half. Oh, man. Okay, I don't have time to tell my Jackie Chan story because...
No!
I'll have to save this for Monday, so I don't want to leave you with a cliffhanger for the weekend, but I was going to say that there's this funny scene, and I go on my Twitter, at Cale Clark. I retweeted this thread. There's a great fight scene in Shang-Chi that takes place on a San Francisco bus, And an actual San Francisco bus driver chimed in. He had this hilarious Twitter thread about how this is not plausible. Of course it's not plausible, but it is really, really funny. Simu Liu, who plays Shang-Chi, actually chimed in and said, this is an amazing, well, he said it in kind of a more crass way, but he chimed in. The thing went viral. He said he loved it. And that scene was my favorite scene in the movie. It's kind of like Speed meets Jackie Chan meets Marvel superheroes. It was really fun. And I'll have to tell you about my Jackie Chan story. Is pretty funny. It's a true story. It's real. You won't believe it. But I'll have to share that with you on Monday. So please remind me of that, Producer Lucas.
I will do that. And I'm also going to remind you to don't forget to create your avatar this weekend to get into the metaverse.
Not a chance, dude. I live in AR. And by that, I mean actual reality. So I hope you've enjoyed. It's been real. It's been really real. Being with you on the Cale Clark Show this week. Patrick Alok took your calls. He says The Crown is really good. He loves it. I was right. It is The Duchess of Cornwall. Lucas produced. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.